Welcome back to the Federal Drive with Tom Temin, federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Few types of deals raise the hackles of services contractors more than lowest price technically acceptable. But some recent protest decisions should make them feel a little better about LPTA. It turns out they can and have won with higher prices when they can justify higher costs. We get more now from procurement attorney Joseph Petrillo of the law firm Petrillo & Powell. And Joe, it looks like there's blue sky in the LPTA clouds here. Tell us what happened.
Well, it's an interesting set of protest decisions that illustrate an aspect of LPTA in which lowest isn't always the winner. The first case I want to describe is in the cost-plus environment. And you can use LPTA for cost reimbursement contracts, although there really should be LCTA, lowest cost technically acceptable. But in any event, a lowest price technical acceptable contract, when used in the cost reimbursement context, is evaluated in one respect like all cost reimbursement contracts, and that is the proposed costs aren't necessarily determinative. They're not necessarily what you evaluate. And that's because there's an incentive for vendors to underestimate proposed costs to make their offers look more attractive. So the government can adjust those costs upward if it needs to reflect what it considers a realistic cost. And in the recent Smartronics decision at GAO, that was done by the agency. The lowest cost offeror was no longer lowest, and award was made to another company. They protested, saying, wait a minute, we were lowest, we should get it. And GAO upheld the ability of the agency to adjust the costs upward to reflect what's realistic under the circumstances.
Well, that gives agencies a lot of discretion then. If they can say, well, if you say this is $15 an hour labor, we think it's $17. Or if this is $54 an hour labor, we think it's $63. That's something that it sounds like contractors have to live with.
That's right. As long as the adjustments are reasonable and related to the technical approach the vendor's taking, they are upheld. But there's an interesting feature to this. Obviously, it's different in the price arena. The government doesn't have to pay a higher price if the price estimate was too low. So how does lowest price fare there? In other cases, GAO has held that an agency can provide in the RFP, in the solicitation, that it will evaluate price to determine if the offeror has an understanding of the requirements. In other words, if you price something so low, it looks like you don't understand how complicated the work is or what's necessary to perform it. And under those instances, the low price can prevent your proposal from being acceptable. And that is another sort of ramification of LPTA in which lowest isn't always the winner.
I guess there's an implicit understanding on the government's part in those cases that if you accepted that bid, you might get a great price, but knowing that the contractor can't eventually fulfill the contract, it's the government that's going to be the loser in some sense.
Well, that's right. The general law is that if you can bid a loss contract in a fixed price environment as long as you have enough financial resources to survive the loss. But there's also, of course, the risk of poor performance if the contractor is trying to minimize its loss or bring a loss contract into a break-even proposition.
We're speaking with Joseph Petrillo, a D.C. procurement attorney with Petrillo and Powell. Well, there was a case a number of years ago, EDS, at the last minute, took $1 billion off its bid for a big Navy contract for networking services. And there are some theories that say that EDS, the company, never survived that. Big as they were, they ended up getting acquired later on. There were big performance problems with that contract early on. Even large companies, if they underbid, can get themselves in trouble.
Well, $1 billion sometimes is a lot of money.
How should agencies proceed then as a result of the Smartronics case with respect to LPTA? And we're talking about not so much fixed price, but cost plus or cost reimbursement.
Well, in the cost reimbursement environment, they already have the ability to adjust costs in the regulations and in the the ordinary operation of evaluation of those of that type of contract. In the fixed price environment, the solicitation is going to have to say that the price will be evaluated for realism in order to make that determination that the price is so low the vendor doesn't understand requirements and then disqualify the proposal. The important part, though, of making that that determination, again, is that it has to be in the solicitation. And if it is, the agency has to then actually make a real price realism determination. There are there's at least one case at GAO in which the agency put the words in the proposal and didn't make the evaluation, and that was a successful protest.
And you're also citing this week, too, something from Professor Ralph Nash, a well-known commentator on federal procurement and now retired from the George Washington University Law School, about the way vendors prove that they are capable of doing a job. Sometimes the way they go about it doesn't really signify whether they can do it or not.
Well, that's right. He's long criticized the traditional method of negotiated procurements with technical proposals describing the approach as an essay writing contest. And his concern is that the winner isn't necessarily the best and most qualified company. It's the one who writes the best proposal, most compelling and convincing proposal. And he's long argued in favor of methods that downplay that process. And one such suggestion he had has actually been used in a case and found favor after being protested at both the Government Accountability Office and the Court of Federal Claims. That is that an offeror, instead of describing its technical approach in the proposal, could demonstrate its capability by citing to past performance and experience. We've done this before. We've done it well. We can do it again. And in the recent decision of Veterans Electric, both the GAO and the Court of Federal Claims, a solicitation allowed offerors to show their technical capability by either providing a more traditional technical proposal describing the performance plan and their and their resources, or else by showing their experience in performing the type of work in the past. And the winning offer had a very poor performance plan, really didn't describe what they were going to do, but they had excellent past performance and experience. The VA accepted that, gave them the award. This was, again, an LPTA procurement, said, you're acceptable, fine. The protester came in and said, wait a minute, they have a terrible, lousy technical approach here. They shouldn't have been found acceptable. And both GAO and the court held it was perfectly fine under this solicitation, the way it was written, to accept their past performance and experience as determinative.
Yeah, so if someone is getting a infrastructure contract to, build a new dam for the Army Corps of Engineers, then if you said, well, we built the Hoover Dam, as opposed to saying, well, we're going to dig this deep and pour this much concrete at this particular strength level, that's a better way to go about it.
That's what Professor Nash has been arguing in favor. One question I have about this method is, this was an LPTA procurement, and so the lowest price acceptable offer got the contract, and this contractor was able to show it had the correct experience and past performance to be acceptable. My question is, what happens when you're making a cost technical trade-off and it's necessary to distinguish between the relative quality of technical proposal, technical qualification? Is there enough information simply in past performance and experience to make that determination? I think we might have to wait for another case to find that out.
Or have a really good contracting officer's representative.
That would help.
Joe Petrillo is a D.C. procurement attorney with Petrillo and Powell. As always, thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom.
You can find more and a link to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Still to come on Federal News Radio, why the former CIO had to bring the hammer of reform legislation down at the Transportation Department. But first, One of the nation's oldest departments has a history department of its own, and it just completed a big breakthrough. It's the Federal Drive with Tom Temin, federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.